Thank you for joining me. I'm Kimberly Rogers, and you're listening to this week's Torah portion from Friday sundown to Saturday sundown. This message is brought to you by themessianicmessage.com. themessianicmessage.com. I hope that you enjoy this teaching. This week's Torah portion is called Vayigash. It means, "And he drew near." We're going to look a little bit more at him drawing near in a moment, but the Torah portion is Genesis chapter 44, starting at verse 18, to Genesis 47, verse 27. The Haftarah is Ezekiel 37, verses 15 to 28, and the Brit Hadashah is Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 10. And before we get started, let's say a word of prayer. Baruch atah Yehovah Eloheinu Melech haolam. Abba, we thank you and praise you and bless you, and we just understand that you are sovereign in all the earth, and we humble ourselves before you this Shabbat and ask that you bless us and keep us and deliver us back to your kingdom. Help us to understand this process with Joseph and how that appears at the end of days. Just pray for all your people wherever they are for your provision and protection. I ask these things in the name of Yeshua. Amen. I find something very interesting about the Joseph Torah portions. First of all, Abraham had two Torah portions that were associated with him. I guess you could say three if you count Chaye Sarah, which is actually about the life of Sarah and how he was burying Sarah. So at most, we have three Torah portions for Abraham. And we have four with Joseph. Joseph has four Torah portions. Now, I'm not saying that that makes him more important than Abraham, but I am saying that I believe that the Lord has given us all this detail about the life of Joseph so that we can see some things about him. Now, in the beginning Torah portion about Joseph, which is Vayeshev, we learn that Joseph is betrayed by his brothers. And this beginning Torah portion has to do with Yeshua. It has to do with Yeshua prophetically, in that it teaches us how the brethren have treated Yeshua. Now, I'm just giving you an overview here about these Torah portions, and you know, there are details within all of the Joseph Torah portion which hark to both Yeshua and Jesus. I guess I need to stop here before we go any further and explain that at times Joseph is representing Yeshua, and at other times Joseph represents Jesus. Now, we know that Christianity, who believes in Jesus, believes that Jesus and Yeshua are the same person. Technically they are, but in content they are not. There are things that need to be tweaked in the understanding of Christianity, because Jesus, of course, as we know, teaches that we are not to obey the Torah, which is totally antithetical to the Torah itself and to what Yeshua teaches. But this idea that Christians have that Jesus says, "Do not keep the Torah," is actually Joseph in Egypt. So I want you to keep that in your head as we go through the Torah portions. The first Torah portion about Joseph, of course, as I said, is Vayeshev. It teaches us how the brethren treated Yeshua and how he was cast into Egypt. Being cast into Egypt, then he becomes like an Egyptian, which means now his name is changed, and he becomes someone else on the outside while he's still the same on the inside. You see, in this Torah portion, this is the third Torah portion about Joseph. In this Torah portion, we get to see that he really is the same person inside, but on the outside, it appears that he is Egyptian, which is what it means to be to have the misunderstandings of Christianity. On the outside, Yeshua looks like Jesus. He looks like he's in Egypt, and so we will come to an understanding at some point during these end times, where everyone will see that Jesus is hiding Yeshua within himself. So in the first Torah portion, Vayeshev, which is about Joseph, we learn how he got taken to Egypt. And then we had Miketz, which starts with dreams, the dreams of Pharaoh, and then the butler and the baker. And when there are dreams, we need to understand that that is an indication that these are prophecies. Abraham's Torah portions and Isaac's Torah portions and even Jacob's Torah portions have to do with character, have to do with interaction and watching them walk and watching them make mistakes so that we can learn from their mistakes. And yes, there is prophecy in those Torah portions. But the Joseph Torah portions start out with Joseph dreaming. And so we need to understand that the Joseph Torah portions have to do more with prophecy than character. So again, to repeat myself, the first Torah portion, Vayeshev, had to do with the prophecy about Yeshua and how he would be rejected by his brethren and how that he would be handed over to Gentiles. See, Joseph was betrayed by his brethren. He was handed over to the Egyptians, Gentiles. So we have that prophecy. And then we have in Miketz the beginning of the prophecies about the interaction between Joseph and his brethren. But first, in Miketz, we need to take a look at the dreams that Pharaoh had and that the baker and the butler had, because those set the scene for Joseph's rise to power in the world. And how has Joseph, at the end of days, how has Joseph risen to power? Well, Joseph represents the house of Israel. The house of Israel is called the house of Joseph. And so, if we can look at where the house of Israel is on the earth, we will see that in the end of days, the rise of Joseph has happened in the West, and in particular with America. Now, we seem to understand this somewhere deep in ourselves, that America is profoundly important at the end of days, yet we don't see America's name in prophecy. Well, it's not that America is so profoundly important, but that America represents the rise of Joseph via Christianity. America being founded on Christian principles, yet having the look of a Gentile, the look of an Egyptian, you see, has hidden within it the teachings of Yeshua, which are different than the teachings of Jesus. So, in these last Torah portions, Vayigash, and then next week's Torah portion, which is Vayiki, we begin to see the restoration of the kingdom, the restoration of Jesus or Yeshua with the brothers. Now, this comes about because the brothers are finally able to see Jesus for who he truly is, not Jesus, but Yeshua, you see. And this happens when, in this Torah portion, Joseph reveals himself to his brethren. The way that this is going to happen is that Judah will step up to the plate and say to Jesus, "Please don't hurt my brother Benjamin." Benjamin representing the remnant of the house of Israel that is keeping the commandments. Benjamin being the son of the right hand, representing those who have the faith of Yeshua. Judah steps up to protect the remnant and says, "Take me instead. Take me for a surety." In other words, he secures the remnant. He secures the Hebrew roots people. He secures the messianics. Right now in Israel, there's a big fight going on between the Jews and the messianic community there. Those Jews who still keep the Torah, but they also believe that Yeshua is the Messiah. They are being rejected right now in Israel. But there's coming a point where Judah will step up and say, okay, we understand that you believe that Yeshua is the Messiah, and we're going to take you now with us to Egypt, and we're going to say to Jesus that we will be a surety for you to protect you so that our Father will live. Now, we understand that God the Father, Yehovah, our Father, is not going to die, but Yehovah, our Father, could die in the hearts of men totally unless Judah steps up to be this surety. So coming near to Jesus has to happen before anything else can happen in the restoration of the kingdom. So Judah comes to Joseph, or he comes to Jesus in the end of days. Genesis 44:18. Then Judah came near to him and said, O my Lord, let your servant, I pray you, speak a word in my Lord's ears, and let not your anger burn against your servant, for you are even as Pharaoh. Yeshua is even as Pharaoh, is even as the Father. Jesus is even as Pharaoh, is even as the Father, even though Jesus is a sort of twisted character that we understand how twisted the teachings of Jesus are. But remember earlier I said that's only a facade, just like it was with Joseph. Now, Joseph, of course, is a type of Messiah, and Judah draws near to him. And, of course, today's Jews, they only know him by his name, Jesus. I have talked to many Jews about this, and in fact, several who are looking for the kingdom to be restored. I'm talking about the house of Israel and the house of Judah. They're looking for them to be restored. But when I try to tell them that I am not a Gentile, that I am in fact the house of Israel, some of them don't understand. They don't get it. They don't see past the mask of Jesus, and therefore they put us into the category of all Christians because they don't make that distinction. So we see Jesus for what he truly is on the inside. We see him as Yeshua, but they don't yet. That's going to take Judah drawing near. Verse 19. My Lord asked his servant, saying, have you a father or a brother? So Jesus wants them to declare who their father is. And he wants them to declare who their brother is. And when they declare the father, Yehovah, who Yeshua is also Yehovah, but when they declare the father, Yehovah, they will also have to declare the brother, which is Benjamin, which represents the messianics, those of us worldwide, and especially in Israel. I believe that this will have significance in Israel first, that they will recognize that they need to be a security or a surety for the messianics. And they'll say that their brother is Benjamin. And of course, Yeshua and Benjamin are tied together, at Benjamin being also a prophetic character revealing Yeshua. So Joseph here is trying to get them to confess their relationships to the father and to the brother, and also to reveal it. You know, the man Joseph here is also wanting to find out if Jacob and Benjamin are still alive. Verse 20. And we said to my lord, we have a father, an old man, and a child of his old age, a little one, and his brother is dead, and he alone is left of his mother, and his father loves him. And you said to your servants, bring him down to me, that I may set my eyes on him. And we said to my lord, the lad cannot leave his father, for if he should leave his father would die. And you said to your servants, except your youngest brother come down with you, you shall see my face no more. Why would Joseph demand that Benjamin come forth? Why would it be Jesus who demands that the Messianics, the Hebrew roots people of the globe, come forth? Well, it's because Benjamin gives true witness to who Jesus truly is when Judah actually steps up. Verse 24, and it came to pass when we came up to your servant my father, we told him the words of my lord, and our father said, go again and buy us a little food. And he said, we cannot go down if our youngest brother be with us, then we will go down, for we may not see the man's face except our youngest brother be with us. Now in verse 27 it says, and your father, your servant my father said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons, and the one went out from me, and I said, surely he is torn in pieces, and I saw him not since. And if you take this also from me, and mischief befall him, you shall bring down my gray hairs with sorrow to the grave. Now therefore, when I come to your servant my father, and the lad be not with us, seeing that his life is bound up in the lad's life. And now let's stop right there. Why is the father's life bound up in the lad's life? Well, it's because Benjamin, as the keeper of the Torah and having the faith in the Messiah, which represents the remnant, which represents the House of Israel remnant, called the Hebrew Roots community or the Messianic community, they bear testimony of the Father and the Son and the Torah together, you see. And so the Father's life is bound up in the testimony or in the witness that we have on the earth. Do you not realize the importance of what we're doing here? We are giving testimony that the Lord, the Father, still lives because of His Son. If we don't give that testimony on the earth, then the memory of the Father will die on the earth, and the memory of the Son then also dies on the earth. And because it's not in the hearts of men, we have a very important role to play prophetically in the end of days. Without those people who are willing to keep the Father's will because of the Son, and by the way, the Father's will was carried out by the Son. That's why we have to have the faith of Yeshua. The faith of Yeshua was to carry out the Father's will by keeping the Torah. If there is no remnant left to do that, then we're going to see the death of the prospect for the Father to have His kingdom on earth being upheld by His Son during the Messianic Kingdom. I hope that made sense. That's why the Father's life is bound up in the life of Yeshua. But it's also a testimony to why His life is bound up in the lives of those of us who are keeping the torch, who are keeping the light, who are keeping the Torah going on the earth, and that includes having the testimony of the Son. And it shall come to pass when he sees that the lad is not with us, that he will die. And your servants shall bring down the gray hairs of my servant our father with sorrow to the grave. So again, we see that the Torah would die on the earth without us. And without the Torah on the earth, there can be no Father and no Son, because the Father and the Son reveal themselves through the Torah. I hope all of this is making sense prophetically. For your servant became a surety for the lad to my father, saying, if I bring him not to you, then I shall bear the blame to my father forever. So here Judah has stepped up to the plate in front of Joseph. The Jews have to step up to the plate in front of Jesus in order to say that they will deliver the remnant. They will deliver Benjamin to the Father. Now therefore I pray you, let your servant abide instead of the lad, a bondman to my Lord, and let the lad go up with his brethren. For how shall I go up to my father, and the lad be not with me, lest peradventure I see the evil that shall come on my father? So Judah is become the surety for Israel, for the house of Israel, for Benjamin, the remnant. See, within the house of Israel, there are two factions. One is Christianity. The other one is Benjamin. Christianity is represented before the world as Jesus. Benjamin represents those who know what Jesus is on the inside, which is Yeshua, and they keep his testimony, keep his laws, keep his Torah. Genesis 45, verse 1. Then Joseph could not refrain himself before all them that stood by him, and he cried, because cause every man to go out from me. And there stood no man with him while Joseph made himself known to his brethren. And he wept aloud. See, Yeshua is going to cry before his brethren. And I believe, in the past I've thought that this was crying for pain, but I believe that this is going to be crying from joy. Because can you imagine, for the last 2,000 years, how Yeshua, having been clad in the clothing of Jesus, must be feeling, and how when Judah steps forward, the relief of the tension for joy, you see, and I believe that's what this is with Joseph. He wept aloud, and the Egyptians in the house of Pharaoh heard it. And Joseph said to him, to his brethren, I am Joseph. You see, and what Jesus is going to reveal when Judah steps up to the plate to do his deal, where he takes responsibility for the Hebrew roots community, for the community of Benjamin, for the Messianics. Suddenly, their eyes are going to be opened, and they're going to realize that Jesus is just a Gentile facade, a Gentile exterior on Yeshua. And so he says, I am Joseph. And immediately he wants to know, does my father yet live? And his brethren could not answer him, for they were troubled at his presence. Why would they be troubled at his presence? Well, because they know, even now, that the man that was put on trial and wrongly accused, his name was Yeshua. You see, they know that. And I think, this is my personal opinion, I think that they are rejecting Yeshua because they know they have wrongly accused him, and they have to repent of that, and they're not quite ready to do that yet, you see. And Joseph said to his brethren, come near to me, I pray you. And they came near, and he said, I am Joseph, your brother, whom you sold into Egypt. See, when they come near, Yeshua is going to say, I am Yeshua, your brother, whom you sold to the Romans. You see, you get the connection there? Now, therefore, be not grieved nor angry with yourselves that you sold me there, for God did send me before you to preserve life. So he's going to explain to them that they don't need to be grieved or angry. In fact, he has already forgiven them because it was the Father's will for him to be spread abroad in the world beneath the facade of Jesus. For these 2 years has the famine been in the land, and yet there are 5 years in which there shall neither be earing nor harvest. And God sent me before you to preserve you a posterity in the earth and to save your lives by a great deliverance. And so here we learn that the reason why Jesus was sent around the earth was to preserve the posterity, to preserve the Father and the Son's teachings in the earth, and that the purpose was also to cause there to be a great deliverance. And now it was not that you sent me hither, but God, and he has made me a father to Pharaoh, and lord of all his house, and a ruler throughout all the land of Egypt. Does not that teach us about Yeshua sitting on the right hand of the Father, and that the Father has given him authority? Haste and go up to my father and say to him, thus says your son Joseph, God has made me Lord of all Egypt. Come down to me and tarry not. Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine what that was like for the brethren. It had to have been very disconcerting, and I'm going to share with you that I believe that when this happens, there are going to be those people who will be a little bit dazed. I believe there won't be confusion. I believe there's going to be a lot of soul searching, a lot of repentance, a lot of change in the minds of those people who now look at Jesus and understand that he is Yeshua in disguise as a Gentile. And now we get to understand the mechanism by which the Lord brings about this great deliverance. It is that he takes his children out of the land and spreads them into the world or into Egypt. Now, Goshen in Egypt is anywhere that the Lord is. They were given a particular land called the land of Goshen, and they stayed pretty much in the land of Goshen. But when the Lord scattered us on the earth, every place where we are, that is a protected place. That is Goshen. Now, I understand that there's some debate on that, so I just want you to know that that is my personal opinion. And the reason it's my personal opinion is because I know that wherever I have gone, the Lord has protected me. Goshen is a place of protection. So wherever I go and the Lord is protecting me, that's my Goshen, you see. People are so worried about in the end of days and when the great tribulation comes, where is our Goshen going to be? I'm telling you, you're in it. You're already in your Goshen. The Father is not going to let you be destroyed. If you are following him, if you are Benjamin, you are his prized son. He's not going to let you be destroyed. I truly, truly believe this in the depths of my heart. And now in chapter 46, we get the genealogies here. And we get all the names of all the people that came with Jacob to be in Egypt. And we see that there were 70 of them that came to be in Egypt. 70 being the number of the nation. 70 being the number of scatterings, you see, among the nations. A prophecy about us being scattered in the end of days. In chapter 47, we learn that Joseph presents his father, Jacob, to Pharaoh. Verse 1, then Joseph came and told Pharaoh and said, "My father and my brethren and their flocks and their herds and all that they have are come out of the land of Canaan, and behold, they are in the land of Goshen." And he took some of his brethren, even 5 men, and presented them to Pharaoh. Why 5? Why only 5 of them? And we don't even know which one, which 5 were taken out of the 12. Well, I believe this is a reference to the Torah. He's presenting them as Torah observant people. And Pharaoh said to his brethren, "What is your occupation?" And they said to Pharaoh, "Your servants are shepherds, both we and also our fathers." That right there is a testimony about the Hebrew Roots community, about the Messianic community worldwide. Why? Because we, even people who are not leading congregations, believe themselves to be in some capacity as a shepherd. What is a shepherd? It's someone who calls the sheep. You see, and we have the testimony among our brethren that they testify to their Christian brethren and to the Gentiles, calling them. Shepherds are taking care of that flock that has gone astray, you see. That's the significance of them saying that they are shepherds. And in verse 4 it says, they said moreover to Pharaoh, "For to sojourn in the land are we come." So they mean to be there only for a little while. Because why? There's coming a great deliverance. "For your servants have no pasture for their flocks, for the famine is sore in the land of Canaan." What famine? Well, we know that there's a famine of food, but also a famine of the word. "Now therefore we pray you, let your servants dwell in the land of Goshen, in a place of protection." And Pharaoh spoke to Joseph, saying, "Your father and your brethren are come to you. The land of Egypt is before you. In the best of the land, make your father and brethren to dwell." You see, here the Pharaoh is acting in the capacity as a representative of our father, who I said earlier gives us the best of the land when we're dwelling in Egypt. "In the land of Goshen, let them dwell. And if you know any men of activity among them, then make them rulers over my cattle." And Joseph brought in Jacob his father and set him before Pharaoh, and Jacob blessed Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said to Jacob, "How old are you?" And Jacob said to Pharaoh, "The days of the years of my pilgrimage are 130 years. Few and evil have the days of the years of my life been, and have not attained to the days of the years of the life of my fathers in the days of their pilgrimage." And Jacob blessed Pharaoh and went out from before Pharaoh. Notice that Pharaoh was talking to Jacob, the man. Prophetically, when there is something going on, it will refer to Jacob as Israel. But here, we just know that he's talking to Jacob, the man. And so, this is not a profoundly prophetic passage. "And Joseph placed his father and his brethren and gave them a possession in the land of Egypt, in the best of the land, in the land of Ramses, as Pharaoh had commanded. And Joseph nourished his father and his brethren and all his father's household with bread according to their families." I said earlier that I believe that America is the end time nation that the Lord has set up to take care of to be the Christian nation that would take care of the rest of the world. I believe that America represents Jesus in the world, you see, in that aspect, not in every aspect prophetically, but in the aspect of having nourished the world with bread. Were we not understood to be the breadbasket of the world? By the way, historically, no other nation has ever been called a breadbasket to the world. Egypt was the breadbasket to the then known world, but in the end times, America is Egypt. It's the place of the Gentiles that believes that Jesus is the right hand of Pharaoh and not Yeshua. So America plays this role in the end of days, taking care of the whole world. One of the things that is very important for us to understand, though, because even though I say a lot of negative things about Christian doctrine, I want you to know I'm not bashing individual Christians, but I also want you to know that there is one thing that Christians do extremely well that Hebrew Roots people don't do. They nourish their brethren. By the way, we never read in the Torah portion where Benjamin being the prophetic representative of the end times messianic movement or Hebrew Roots movement, does not have the reputation of nourishing anybody. Joseph is the one that nourishes the people. The house of Israel being the larger portion of that being Christianity, where Yeshua is clothed as Jesus, they nourish the people. Oh, and by the way, let me just read you a little passage from the New Testament, where in Matthew 23:23, Yeshua said, "Woe to you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for you pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you to have done, and not to leave the other undone." So while the Hebrew Roots community is going around like Torah terrorists with their Torah bats, the Christians are continuing to do the weightier matters of the law. Sometimes I get emails and phone calls from people asking me why it is that they are struggling so much financially when they look around and they see our Christian brethren who deny the Torah, but the Lord is prospering them. Why? Because the weightier matter of the law is more important than the mechanics of the law. See, Yeshua said at the end of that passage in Matthew 23:23, you gotta do both. You can't do one and leave the other one undone. And here's what he said. Judgment, mercy, and faith. So, judgment. What is judgment there? What does he mean? Well, we need to rightly judge the fruits of people. We need to show mercy, and we need to have the faith of Yeshua, meaning that we fulfill the Father's commandments. The faith of Yeshua is that he fulfilled the Father's commandments. And he gave the Father's commandments, as a matter of fact. And didn't he say that the one who teaches the commandments will be great in heaven? Well, he came teaching the commandments. That's why he's greatest in the heavens. Because not only did he teach the commandments, but he kept them perfectly. So he gets to be greatest in the kingdom, see? And so the faith of Yeshua is our faith, in that we uphold the Father's commandments in the same way that Yeshua did, and we teach the commandments. But here's what we do wrong. We go around judging our brethren on how well they do the commandments. We don't judge them on whether or not they are doing the commandments. They are doing the commandments. But if they don't do them our way, then we get our Torah bat out and we start beating up people. You see, that is a lack of mercy. And I believe, and this is my personal opinion, so you can disagree with me, and I'll still love you anyway. I believe that the weightier matter that we have to be concerned about is the mercy. Mercy. We have faith and we're doing judgment. We're just doing the judgment in the wrong way. And here's what we tend to do in the Hebrew Roots community. We tend to get all over people if they're not keeping the Sabbath or saying the name or wearing the right color of tzitzit or whatever they're doing that's different than we are. We're not content that they're actually doing the commandments. We're only content if we can make people do it our way, and if we can make people see things our way, and if we can make people get on our particular calendar or whatever issue it is. We make those judgments, but when it comes to actually judging correctly when people commit idolatry or fornication or whatever other, gluttony and gossip and slander, when people are committing those things, we say, well, they didn't mean it. We're just going to go ahead and go against what the Torah says, and we're not going to, you know, set them outside the camp. So Yeshua said in Matthew 23:23 that we need to do correct judgment, correct mercy, and correct faith. What is correct judgment? Correct judgment, the weightier matter of the law, is that when somebody commits a sin according to the definition of the Torah, then we take certain action. But the incorrect way to do the weightier matter of the law of judgment is that we jump all over people when they're not doing it our way. What is the weightier matter of mercy? Well, when we say, oh, they didn't mean to commit that sin, well, then that is the incorrect way to do the weightier matter of mercy. What is the correct way to do the weightier matter of mercy? Well, it is that we say, you know what? You keep the Sabbath different than I do, and you have a different understanding of the calendar than me, and I don't like the color of your blue or the color of your tzitzit in general. But you know what? I'm your brother or sister, and I'm just going to love you anyway. And so we'll just agree to disagree. That is the correct way to do the weightier matter of mercy. And what is the correct way to do the weightier matter of faith? Well, as I said before, it is to believe in Yeshua as the Messiah and keep the Torah. Now, most of the people in the Hebrew Roots movement, that's exactly what we do. So we're getting that part correct, I believe. And now one last thing, getting back to Judah approaching Jesus, or put it another way, the Jews approaching Christianity. I believe that America actually represents Christianity globally more than Catholicism. Why do I believe that? Well, even though Catholicism is a global belief, Catholicism came out of Esau. I have done this teaching in the Esau effect. It was designed by Esau. The Edomites were in Rome. They created Catholicism. But out of Catholicism came another form of Christianity, which the Bible calls the daughters of the great whore. Now, that's because the Protestants have rejected some of what their mother teaches, but they haven't rejected all of what their mother teaches. Yet, America is based on Protestant Christianity, and I believe that in the end of days, the Jews are going to ask the Christians, Judah is going to ask Jesus, Israel, the state of Israel, is going to ask America to spare their brother Benjamin. They're going to step forth and make a proclamation saying that they will be a surety for the Benjamites. the spiritual Benjamites, meaning the remnant brother that is within the house of Israel, that is within Christianity. Does this make sense? And I believe that when that happens, it will be the start of the restoration of the whole house of Israel. But there will be more to come before there can be a restoration of Israel, of the whole house of Israel, meaning the complete restoration of Jacob, the house of Jacob. See? And when money failed in the land of Egypt, so we're going to see the money fail, and in the land of Canaan, so it's going to fail everywhere. It's going to fail globally. And all the Egyptians came to Joseph and said, "Give us bread." See, they're going to come to the United States to give us bread when the money fails. Joseph said, "Give your cattle." And so they gave the cattle. What is their cattle? It's kind of like the stuff that they own. And they brought their cattle to Joseph. And when that year ended, they came the second year and said, that, you know, our money is spent and we have no money left. And so then Joseph said that he would buy all the land from them. So he bought all the land of Egypt for Pharaoh so that nobody else except the priests in the land owned anything in the land. So we're already seeing that happen in the form of these mortgage corporations, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. They're government agencies that literally hold your mortgage. And so when it's time for you to go to Joseph and say, "We're starving," they'll say, "Well, you just become a renter," you see. Now, it's funny because in the last 3 or 4 years, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac have both started making rental contracts with people who live in the foreclosed homes. And I believe that we're going to see more of that happening. So then he says, Joseph says to the people, "Behold, I have bought you this day. I have bought you this day." Let me repeat that. He says, "I have bought you this day." What did he do? Joseph bought the people. He put them in Pharaoh's system so that everything that they owned, their cattle and their land, then belonged to Pharaoh. And he said, "Here is seed for you, and you shall sow the land." You know what that is a description of? That's a description of communism. Here in the end of days, America has become a communist nation. Why? Because Barack Obama is a communist Muslim. He is not an American, and he is not Christian, and he is not Jewish. He has Jewish and Christian heritage in his family, but he has chosen Islam. And Barack Obama has implemented every system possible that could be possible to get your information, to get all your possessions, and to get you into the system where now you're beholden to the system and you work for the system, you see? And so Joseph is, this story here in Joseph is telling us that this is going to come to pass. And right there in verse 26, and it said, "Joseph made it a law over the land of Egypt to this day that Pharaoh should have the fifth part, except the land of the priests only, which became not Pharaoh's." Now, that fifth part is 20%. Until that time, 10% was the standard. Now, Joseph has made it a law that the taxes or the tribute to Pharaoh will be the highest that have ever been heard on the known earth at that time. And is that not what's happening now? Look, with Obamacare, the taxes have been raised. Those premiums that you're going to pay to an insurance company, those are, he's calling them taxes, right? So call that part of your tax liability and put that onto your other tax liability. Add them together and see if you are not going to be paying the highest taxes the world has ever seen. Verse 27, and Israel dwelt in the land of Egypt, in the country of Goshen, and they had possessions therein, and grew and multiplied exceedingly. That, I believe, is a prophecy about you and me, about us in our little personal Goshens where the Lord protects us. And if we are willing to do what the Christians do, which is be merciful and feed the poor and take care of people the way that Joseph, clothed as Jesus, does, we will be able to grow and multiply, and our possessions will increase, and we won't have anything to worry about, because that right there says Israel, which is prophecy. So we need to understand that we represent Israel in the world, in Goshen, and that we can be greatly blessed in Egypt, in the land of Goshen. I hope this Torah portion has been a blessing to you. Shabbat Shalom.